This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. A new report by the Institute for Economics and Peace has determined that the world is becoming less peaceful. The Global Peace Index 2016 has found that once relatively peaceful countries are becoming more violent, primarily due to increased terrorism and higher levels of political instability. Iceland is the world's most peaceful country, and Syria is the least. Among the countries experiencing higher levels of violence are also South Sudan, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Somalia. My guest is Michelle Breslauer. She is the director of the Americas Program at the Institute for Economics and Peace. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, it's a hefty report. It's so detailed, so we can only sort of focus on some of the trends in it. But first, I think it's important for us to begin this conversation by asking how one defines peace. Because if peace is simply the absence of war or violence, authoritarian regimes can be quite peaceful, right?
Exactly. And that's a really good point. One of the key reasons that we are doing this work in the first place is to try to make peace a more tangible and achievable measure of progress. And so we really want to also draw attention to the fact that peace is much more than the absence of war, because when you think about it in that context, then it only relegates peace, issues of peacefulness and conflict to outside, to other countries. We think of very sort of standard African or Middle Eastern countries. But peace is really about two things. It's about the absence of violence or absence of fear of violence. And that means everyday interpersonal violence, violent crime, homicides. It's also about the absence of conflict, but it's also about the presence of attitudes, institutions, and structures that help sustain peaceful societies. So, as you said, you can have a society with a very repressive regime, but also it could have very low levels of violence. Ultimately, even though there are low levels of violence at the moment, that peaceful society might become less peaceful if people start to demonstrate against the government.
So I suppose it shouldn't surprise any of us that Syria is distinguished by being the most dangerous or the most violent country in the Global Peace Index. And how has, I mean, the war in Syria has continued for several years. How has Syria sort of moved around in the trends that you see over at least a few years?
Well, we've been doing the Global Peace Index now for 10 years, so we have a really significant data set. And what we saw is that back when we started the index, you know, talking around 2008, Syria was in the middle of the index. People didn't look at it as a warning country or a country at risk. And now Syria has tumbled to the bottom of the index. It's been the least peaceful for a couple years now. And I think what that really shows is that when a country becomes embroiled in a cycle of conflict and violence, it's very difficult to emerge from that. And it becomes a cycle that's difficult to break. So what we see in Syria is an incredibly high number of displacement. So we saw in 2007, only 0.1% of the Syrian population was displaced. Now it's over 60% of the Syrian population. There are death tolls rising up to about 470,000. So these are really significant numbers. But also bear in mind that the conflict in Syria has become internationalized as well. And this follows a trend that we're starting to see globally, is that internal conflicts are beginning to be internationalized. And so you have proxy wars and international actors becoming involved. And it starts to show how now we see conflict changing and it's taking on a different nature. And we really do need to think about addressing some of these conflicts as an international community.
I was moved by the fact that after Syria, the next several most violent countries are South Sudan, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Somalia. Of those four countries, three of them, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Somalia, are countries that the U.S. has directly had a hand in dropping bombs. Somalia, the U.S. has had a drone war. Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. has had, of course, over the past decade or so, ground troops, but also aerial bombings. How do you see these countries and why they're so high on the list, and if they're directly linked to foreign intervention that the U.S. has led?
Well, I think when we're looking at the data, we can really see growth in terrorism following foreign invasion. Terrorism after 9/11 was not so high, and it's grown. It grew pretty steadily after Iraq and Afghanistan, and after the start of the Syrian civil war, numbers of terrorist deaths around the world have jumped dramatically.
And I guess it shouldn't surprise us that war engenders terrorism, that people use violence to lash back or, you know, in some way take revenge for the violence that they feel is wrought to them.
Yes, and what it's also showing, though, is that when you have societies that don't have a base level of resilience, of inclusion, or of access to resources and services, or of governance structures that are effective and inclusive, then violent conflicts, instabilities tend to turn violent. So for us, it's important to also look at what are the common attitudes, institutions, and structures that help countries resolve conflict in a non-violent way. Because we will experience shocks, whether they're a foreign intervention, a lack of resources, a natural disaster. And what we need to understand is how can countries and societies experience those shocks without it turning into complete instability and violent conflict.
So one of the other things that stood out in this year's Global Peace Index is the inclusion of Palestine for the first time. Now, Palestine is still considered a territory rather than a country, but yet I understand there are some sort of definitions of a nation state that it does meet that warranted its inclusion in this report.
Yes, so the Global Peace Index ranks 163 countries and territories, and that's important to note. Our aim is to be able to try to measure as much of the global population as possible. So what we're not doing is making a value or political judgment on what constitutes a country or not. We are trying to see which countries have enough data that we can actually try to do an even more comprehensive measure of global peacefulness. So right now, across these 163 territories, we're actually measuring 99.7% of the population of the world. So it's a huge amount. And we included Palestine for a number of reasons. Firstly, Palestine, and just to be clear, we are measuring the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and Gaza Strip. There was data available. We also note that Palestine administers its own government and judicial systems, and so there was great interest in being able to include this data in the Global Peace Index.
And where does Palestine fall in the Global Peace Index? And, you know, this is a country, if you will, you know, want, if you can call it a country still, and I should say you point out 130 countries in the world do recognize it as a country, but where does it fall on the index? And how do you acknowledge the fact that it's crippled by a siege, by occupation, even in the West Bank at least, you know, that this isn't a country that can actually have full use of its resources because it doesn't isn't able to control its resources as other countries might?
So Palestine ranks 148 out of 163 countries, mm-hmm. So it's towards the bottom. They want to be really clear that what we're trying to do is take a snapshot annually of the relative states of peace in the world. And so what we're doing is we're not trying to do a qualitative analysis or a value judgment around what
sure.
the specific factors are that influence levels of peacefulness. We're trying to understand from a data perspective what that situation is now. So in Palestine, we see out of the area that we are including very high levels of violent demonstrations, high levels of political instability, neighboring country relations. It does not score well, obviously. Neither does Israel, for that matter, in this index, as well as deaths from external conflict. So all of those indicators are really impacting the score for Palestine. But just remember that what we're doing is trying to show what those indicators say about peacefulness across 163 territories.
So one of the other things that was very interesting to me, you know, it's depressing to talk about what makes countries violent, but it's an index. So there is a most peaceful country. Iceland is the most peaceful country in the world. What can we tell about how Iceland occupies this top spot that can provide some lessons for the rest of the world, particularly the other end of the spectrum?
Well, Iceland is a small country. It is consistently at the top of the index. One thing to note about Iceland that I think is a good anecdote to kind of show how different it might be from somewhere like the U.S. is that I believe in about 2013 was the first time in history that Iceland experienced a policeman using a gun. And so that actually stands out. Those very low levels of everyday violence. Iceland also doesn't have high military expenditures, high levels of involvement in external conflicts. One thing to note is that the second part of the research that the Institute for Economics and Peace does is statistical analysis to understand, well, what are the common drivers of the most peaceful societies? And through that, we've identified 8 pillars of what we call positive peace that describe those common areas that need to be invested in to decrease violence and sustain peace. And it's everything from lowering levels of corruption, increasing access to information, equitable distribution of resources, investing in education, etc.
So let's talk a little bit about the United States in the last few minutes of this program, since you and I are both here in the U.S. Where does the U.S. fall on this list, on this index, particularly given that the U.S. has, I understand, the most number of firearms per capita in the world, which one might imagine would make it a violent country? And we do see just very sort of continuous levels, low levels of violence around the country from gun deaths, right?
Well, the U.S. ranks 103 out of 163 countries. So it's about in the middle of the index. I think what's really important to remember is that when you're looking at the rankings, you're looking at relative states of peace. So it doesn't mean that number one, Iceland, is completely at peace, or 163, Syria, is completely unpeaceful. One is more peaceful and less peaceful. So going back to that first definition of the absence of violence or absence of fear of violence, what are those elements that are bringing the U.S. to the middle of the index? We have very high levels of involvement in external conflicts. That was something that we already mentioned. Incredibly high military spending, although that has been going down. Nuclear capability and weapons development, but also very high in the U.S. But I think the one area that people don't focus on enough is that the U.S. has the highest incarceration rate in the entire world. Right. And in this context, it's considered a negative. So even though the U.S. is about 4% of the world's population, we house about 22% of global prisoners. And so that's a really striking figure. So what we've seen in the U.S. is that over the past 60 or so years, violent crime and homicides have actually been going down. We are in a more peaceful time in terms of interpersonal violence in the U.S. than we were, for instance, in the early 90s. However, the spending on police and incarceration has doubled in the U.S. So it's a question also about what are we spending on? Are those efficient allocation of our resources? And to have such an extreme level of spending on incarceration and police, does that actually match the peacefulness that we might be trying to achieve in spending on those prevention services. So I think that in the US, we need to also think about this cycle of violence and incarceration that exists here.
Right. I mean, particularly given that the US is the world's wealthiest country, supposed to be the world's most politically powerful country, we should be somewhere closer to the top. But as you pointed out, we're closer to the middle. Give out a website where people can find out more about and read the actual report, the Global Peace Index.
Absolutely. I encourage everybody to go to visionofhumanity.org because we have a really great interactive map where you can look at every area that we measure in the Global Peace Index by year and by indicator, and it's actually pretty cool.
Visionofhumanity.org, and I understand the Institute for Economics and Peace is also online at economicsandpeace.org.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thanks so much.
Michelle Breslauer is the director of the Americas program at the Institute for Economics and Peace. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.